Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your host for Chatterbox.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm your host, Ara, and we have Alon remotely today.
I'm here, everybody.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Very well. California's bright and shiny, as always.
So this is our official GDC show, I guess.
Well, yeah, but I'm not exactly at GDC. It's not like I'm going to be pulling anybody off the street and talking to them about the big show, but...
Oh, not quite yet, huh?
It's definitely GDC week.
That's
it's
right.
Happening.
For people who don't know, GDC stands for the Game Developers Conference.
Best time of the year.
Yes. Now that the E3 is not so popular anymore.
Not really around. And to be honest, even when E3 was around, GDC was still cooler. Still a lot more fun.
So I've got a veritable cavalcade of topics here tonight.
That's fantastic. I looked up quite a few things that... aren't necessarily deep topics in my mind, but they're going to be as soon as I see the conference discussions on them.
Yeah, now there's a huge list of topics that I was looking at that, you know, there's going to be lectures on and roundtables on and other stuff at the conference that I picked out a few that I thought were, like, you know, more interesting than the others. So I figured we could, you know, go back and forth a little bit about that.
Definitely.
As you know, I've got my rants that have been, you know, very, very carefully held back for so many weeks.
That way you can improve on them.
Yes, and I don't know, what have you got in store?
Well, first I want to let all the listeners know, GDC, you don't just find it at GDC.com, but if you go to GDCONF, short for GD Conference, GDCONF.com, you can see all the different sessions that are running. And there's tons of stuff running all the time, so we can hear... You know, people like yourself involved in the game industry actually talking about whatever they want to talk about, how they made some particular game or how they worked on the sound for the game or the programming or the AI or something. And so we get to choose which session we find most interesting to us at any given point. And, you know, I guess you're probably going to go to a lot of the game design sessions.
Yeah, there's like, I don't know, there were pages, I had about 20 pages of just game design sessions.
Yeah, there's a lot, and they're
so,
all really cool.
I'm not even going to go to probably even, I don't know, half of those being at the whole conference this week.
You
but,
can't. You can't because there's too many, but they're all really fun to go to.
Exactly.
Now, there's a couple things to clear up. Beginning of the show, what have I been playing lately? That's what I like to talk about. Have you been playing anything recently, the last week or so?
Well, you know what? I have broken the 200-hour barrier in Disgaea 2.
All right. Let's try something new next week. Let's make it a goal. I'm going to put a new game in your hand.
I would love that because, you know, Disgaea, I don't know, it's kind of like, you know, some kind of, I feel like Homer in hell, basically, with the donuts.
Yeah, you need to just give it up.
Yeah, I think, well, somebody needs to steal the game from me, really.
I already did that one. Didn't work.
Yeah, so giving it back is
part of it. So I've been playing Elite Beat Agent. I've talked about that in the past. I finally actually got a hold of a copy of it so I could play it.
Yeah, I'm actually... really curious to hear what you have to say about that game, because I did spend some time playing it as well.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm actually really surprised at how different it is from the Japanese version, because I'd played the Japanese version.
Oh, really?
Crazy name, something,
Uenden. Yeah. Uenden, yeah. See, I only played the Japanese version, so this is going to get real interesting.
It's very different. Like, just the subtleties, like how you find the levels and stuff, and it's just, I would have expected them to basically just change the music and keep everything else the same. And I was surprised to see that they put a lot of effort into changing it. And I believe there's multiplayer in it, which I know there's multiplayer in the American one.
Right.
And I thought that there was not in the Japanese, but I might just have not realized it.
So, I mean,
Japanese or something.
Is the basic gameplay the same?
Yeah, the basic gameplay is the same, but the songs are all like American songs that you've heard before, like stuff by Ashley Simpson and Madonna and,
wow,
you know, Jackson 5 and stuff, which are actually... I like most of the songs, and it's cool, but
yeah. Well, that's quite
it encouraged me to get both copies, you know, Japanese and American, because they're so different.
Very interesting.
I thought that you hadn't played it yet. Now that you've played it, it's much less interesting to me. Did you know also that the Red Star, GameStop.com, listed as April 2nd now?
Yes, I've heard new news about this.
Apparently, real news or just news from the web?
No, actually, I've heard some, you know, a little bit of insider news here. Apparently, the... European localization of the game has been holding up its release. So
They want to have a global launch for a game that no one's heard of?
I suppose.
Okay. Well, that's certainly...
But people will hear of it.
I bet it'll get very good reviews, as it always has been. But I'd like to actually get to play the final version one of these days, you know?
Yeah, me too.
Rather than just sitting in your living room playing a dev copy of it. So let's talk about what's going to be on the show tonight. You said you have a whole bunch of topics. I ran through the GDC session titles and found a few that struck a chord instantly. One of them was a Loco-Roco postmortem. Those are always interesting, but it's actually subtitled Making Happiness into Gameplay.
Yeah, I found that to be quite interesting, too, because the description of this lecture was something like, oh, well, what's it like to make a game that's like made from pure happiness or something like that? And while, you know, I've only played the demo for Loco-Roco and I thought it was really cool, pure happiness is not what I was experiencing the whole time.
Well, but that's really, you can tell that that's sort of the theme of the game. But one thing that bothers me is that a lot of the sessions that are run by native Japanese speakers who are not, you know, English-speaking at all,
right,
they tend to be very much fluff because they have so much difficulty just getting the language across that they have a translator and stuff, and it's a fluffy session with no actual value to the content. And so,
I have experienced that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of that is from just the translator's either inability to relay something exceptionally precise, or what I've seen happen sometimes is that the translator will kind of like soften the impact of what the person's actually saying just to be polite. It's just kind of like a Japanese type of thing. It's a culture type of thing. So a lot of times what you get out of the translator is not quite exactly what the person was saying.
Well, see, when you don't really speak the language and you have to prepare something ahead of time, like sometimes they'll try to speak English because they barely know it. Or what they'll do is they'll just come up with a predetermined thing where they can just talk through some slides and stuff. And when you do that, you're just really not getting anything interesting across. You're just, here's what happened in the game, and we look at the picture of this game. Wasn't it cool? Great. And they move on. And I don't know. I've just noticed after several years, it finally hit me that these sessions are all crap. And, I mean, I keep giving them a chance because they all have a lot to say. I hope that one of them will actually say something.
Right. Well, I've certainly listened to some, you know, GDC lectures from English-speaking people, and some of those have not been so good either. But,
so there's a lot of crap out there. But there's actually, that's what I love about GDC is that there's so much good stuff, too. One of the other sessions two of them, actually. You know what? I've got three more here. They're all interesting. I keep thinking that, no, only this one's good. But Accessibility Idol, season finale, that's the title. It's a silly title, but the point is that they're trying to make games accessible to the handicapped. And
right.
I'm wondering, my question here is, do I even need to care, right, about this? And maybe I'm being harsh.
Yeah,
but
I don't know. It's an interesting academic exercise. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying that it's only just an academic exercise. But the thing is, with people who have disabilities, I mean, there's so many different types of disabilities that, like, really each one is kind of like a special accessibility case.
Yeah, and you just won't be able to cater a game to them. So, I don't know. I find it difficult that we would even consider it an option because there's so many different, you know, someone's missing a left arm, someone's missing a right arm, or someone can't comprehend, you know, this type of spatial geometry or something. And so I wonder why we even make leaps or make attempts, rather, towards this sort of development. But, you know, if I have time, I might stop in on that session. Now, there's another one, Burgers and Blitz, talking about the Burger King game that were made.
Oh, cool. Totally missed that.
Yeah, potential, like, adver gaming and how this, you know, how it could affect gaming. And I don't think that's what the session's about. The session is probably about how can you do this effectively. My question is more like, how could this affect gaming? Do we think we'll see more of it? And is there any value to it? And actually, the Burger King game sold really well, and I played them online, too. They're not, well, the one that I played wasn't horrible.
Well, thanks to you, you've got, what, three copies each?
I bought two copies each because I wanted to give you some, but you know, maybe I want to keep them. Maybe they're going to be super valuable one day.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'll get a signed copy. So then,
By the Burger King?
Yes, by the Sneak King himself. So the final one that I saw that really seemed interesting to me is really just the contradiction of the concept where the title is Creating New IP and Innovation in Games, Destroying the Box, right? So we want to get out of the box. the old cliche, creating new intellectual property. The problem here is that it's a discussion from people in EA. They say building new IP is one of the hardest challenges out there. At EA Montreal, we're fiercely committed to not only creating new IP, but core innovation in games as well.
Dude, that just sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook to me.
Yeah, my curiosity is that if they're so fiercely committed to this, why is it that I haven't seen any new IP out of them except something that's like a street version
maybe,
of basketball?
Maybe it's just so hard for them because every time they get to the point where maybe we'll make a new IP, they're like, no, let's go use this other license.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, can you think of any new IP from EA that's not just a slight change or something they already did? I mean, SSX, right?
Recently? No.
Yeah.
Not recently.
And even if they do make new intellectual property, it's simply another sport put in another context.
Right. Well, the thing that makes it so hard, I mean, I don't think it's intrinsically hard. It's just hard now because, well, the budgets have just gone up like crazy, and especially a publisher developer like EA, you know, they want to make their, you know, $1 million selling games, and so they have to make these huge budgets, so it's just this gigantic commitment of resources to do anything at all.
Yeah, I don't get it. Anyway, we'll be back after the break, it seems.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name is Ara, and we've got Alon somewhere in the ether. Are you there, Alon?
I'm here on the phone. Can you hear me?
There he is. Alon is being beamed to us via telephone from Sunnyvale.
Sunnyvale, California, outside San Jose, where the GDC used to take place. This year, like 2 years ago, it is going to be in San Francisco, and I think that they're going to keep it in San Francisco from now on, but I'm not sure. They could change at any time.
Yep.
Anyway, before we get into the show, of course, I have to remind everyone that UAT.edu, the website for the University of Advancing Technology, is a place to go so you can learn about games and getting into the industry. And let's talk more about GDC.
Yeah, I got a bunch of interesting little tidbits here. Now, did you see the listing for the interactive cinematography lecture?
No, not at all. And really, I have not given a thorough enough look at all the different sessions. I don't do that until I actually get there and get the booklet.
All right, so this one really caught my eye because this lecture is supposed to be about applying rules in cinematography as far as cameras and stuff like that to video games. And now you know how much I hate, you know, the video game as cinema, right?
Yes, we've talked about.
But this, I think, is really cool. And one thing that has always surprised me is that for the great amount of influence that movies have on video games, and for however movie-like a lot of video games are trying to be, there are some really, really simple camera concepts that are like the most basic of rules in cinematography that are almost completely ignored in video games. One of these things that my film school friends tell me about, there's like this 180 rule, which, if you haven't heard of that, basically it means that when there's two people talking, there's this imaginary line that the camera can't rotate more than 180 degrees, because if you do that, then you confuse the composition of the scene. So when you're switching from camera to camera, the switch can't take up more than, you know, like 180 degrees, right?
Gotcha.
So this happens in games all the time, with the camera flying everywhere in all these unexpected directions. And it confuses the hell out of people. And everybody wonders, everyone just accepts it, I guess. And so I'm really interested to hear what that guy has to say. I hope he brings that issue up.
Well, I don't know. Like, when I think of games these days, usually it's one camera that you get to control. So you're talking about when cameras actually change?
Well, even let's say, if you're talking about, you know, some kind of character platform, action platform type game in 3D,
yeah.
There's a lot of games where the first one that comes to mind is Maximo, for example, where the camera will actually rotate you know, in order to kind of avoid having it collide with objects near you, will just rotate in all kinds of unpredictable ways. And that's confusing. It's unsettling, right? So that's one example of that.
I understand what you're saying. Kind of like when you play Sonic and then you're suddenly running towards
the
screen.
Yeah, Sonic is an even better example. I mean, the camera goes crazy there, right?
All the time.
So here's another one. This other guy's talking about dynamic difficulty deconstructed. And he says, you know, is dynamic difficulty the magic bullet for game balancing? And I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past, right?
We're not talking just about flipping a switch and saying you're on hard mode now.
Right. No, this is what I think that they're talking about, although I could be wrong. What it sounds like is that they're talking about the game basically making itself easier or harder based on your performance.
Yeah, kind of like an in-game handicap.
Right. But one that, I mean, you don't pick the handicap. The game picks the handicap depending on how you're doing.
You understand what you're saying. I was never really keen on that sort of idea.
Well, it can be potentially incredibly dangerous because, as everybody knows, I mean, you can't rely on the player's performance to be a good indicator of how good he is, because sometimes a player will do really awesome, and then sometimes they'll do really, really bad, and it's just totally unpredictable.
Kind of like me playing Elite Beat Agent.
Right. And I've always thought that this whole dynamic difficulty stuff that everyone's trying to implement lately, it's kind of like one of those popular things to implement in a game lately, in modern games at least. I think that it's really overrated because the games that don't do any of this fancy stuff, let's say, I don't know, all the Mario Brothers games is what I'm thinking of, the game starts out a little too easy, and it'll get, help me out here.
I'm not sure what you're trying to say. What I don't like about it
is
that, I mean, it's a good idea, at least hypothetically for me, for attracting children to a game. But when you get an adult, they enjoy the challenge. And so you want to have a kid have a game that'll be, they can succeed at the game no matter, you know, what their what their abilities are, because you're going to have 3-year-olds playing and 6-year-olds.
Right.
So you want it to be dynamic so that they'll succeed and be encouraged, because kids, you know, will get discouraged if they're constantly losing.
Well, here's the thing, is that, you know, you'll have, the main problem is that when you have a dynamic difficulty, invariably you'll start penalizing the player for doing really, really well, because when they do well, the game gets harder. And that's the main problem I have with that. But I think what I was trying to say before with games like Super Mario Bros. That have kind of like a static difficulty ramp is that, yeah, you know, one of the hardest things in video games is to make difficulty match the exact level of the player that you need it to in order for the experience you want to create. But a game that's really designed well, when the game is easy, it's still interesting. So the player doesn't mind that it's easy. And when it gets harder gradually enough so that while the game continues to be interesting, they won't get frustrated by it as it gets, you know, very, very gradually harder.
Okay.
Anyway.
Next topic.
All right, so this one totally, I don't even understand this. You've heard of the game design challenge.
Well, there's more than one, I believe.
They do this every year, and basically what they do is they'll take 3 popular, well-known game designers and they'll have them design a game based on some kind of premise.
Oh, when the 3 guys get in the room and all talk about their same game design theory.
Right, here's the premise, okay?
Okay.
Design a game with a highly unorthodox input device, a square of fabric, a needle, and some thread. I don't know what kind of game you can make out of this other than the knitting game. So,
well, I've been to that thing before, and it's really interesting. Especially when you get the right people in there. Will Wright, generally, is one of the 3 characters you put in there.
Well, he's not going to be on this time, but it sounds like it's going to be even more interesting this year.
For the record, everyone, we're talking about the Game Developers Conference. You can go to gdconf.com to learn about the stuff that we are talking about. And I guess we'll be right back right on.
We'll be back, folks. We'll be right back.
me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
I'm Alan on the phone.
Coming to us live from Sunnyvale, California. Now, if you want to call in and join our conversation, you can call 1-866-536-1100. Do we have any special messages this segment, Alan?
Special messages?
Yeah.
No.
No, okay, awesome.
Okay, yeah, we do. Go to myspace.com/chatterboxgameshow and go to chatterboxgameshow.com to see more about our wonderful program.
Yes, and you can send us email, and we love to get email, and you can send it to both of us or separately or whatever.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of email lately.
You've been getting a lot of email lately.
We both do.
All I get is Viagra, whatever.
When it comes to me, it's coming to the both of us. People want to know, how do we make a podcast? I want to get on and do a video game podcast.
Oh, yes, you've got a little diatribe to say about this, don't you?
No, not really. I mean, we could talk about it if we're prepared, but I think we've got other things that are more pressing.
We've got bigger fish to fry.
Really, if people want to do a podcast, you get a microphone, and that's about all you need. Microphone and a computer.
There you go. Okay, so I wanted to talk about the Wii interface, the segment. And specifically, you know, everybody's going gaga about the Wii, and I haven't heard a lot of criticism of the Wii interface itself. So,
really?
Well, you know,
because I've criticized it aplenty after last year's E3.
Well, this is good. But what I've heard mostly is that, oh, it's the Wii, and oh, it's chicks dig it, and all that stuff. And that's fine and all, but maybe, you know, everyone's come down after, you know, this Wii-like high. You know, there's some problems with the controller, I think.
There's all sorts of problems.
All right. Well, why don't you tell me about a couple of them?
All right. So, it's hard for me to remember. I'm not sure when you came on the show versus E3 last year.
I actually haven't heard you criticize the Wii stuff that much. I was almost even bracing myself to have a heated battle of sorts.
No, no. I was, before last year's E3, I was all about how the Wii or the Revolution was going to save gaming. And then I played it at E3, and I realized that the controller doesn't have absolute positioning, which is what everyone had sort of expected from it.
Right.
Before E3, we expected it would know where you are in space, and it would be smart about that.
It fakes it, doesn't it?
The only time it has absolute positioning is when it's using the infrared sensors. Otherwise, it only has relative positioning.
Right.
Which is fine if it's going to do it well. And to be honest, the accelerometers do work well, but the infrared doesn't work that well, and of course only works when you're pointing at the machine. So I was hoping, for instance, that you could say, hey, I want to make a fun game. Let's make boxing. And they obviously made boxing, but let's do it a different way. We each hold the controller with a nunchuck, or I was thinking at the time, just two controllers. And you could face each other and box each other and hopefully still sort of look at the screen as well. But it doesn't, like, know where your hand is. It just knows that it's thrusting forward, right? I wanted to be able to have full motion,
right.
And it didn't do that. And on top of that, I used this example. The people like, let's say you're playing Street Fighter. You want to, you know, jump towards someone and hit the kick button and do a kick at exactly the right time with exactly the right strength, right, using one of the six buttons and a kick or a punch, right? And it's important that it does what you want it to do every single time. And if it doesn't, your controller ends up in a pile of pieces at the edge of your wall because you couldn't handle how dumb it reacted to you, how poorly, rather, because you tossed the thing because it just didn't work. You need a controller to do exactly what you expect it to do every single time. And the Wii doesn't do that. And
right.
So it's good for casual games where, oh, everybody's having fun. Who knows if I, you know, swung it the wrong way this time. Who knows if it worked exactly the way I wanted it to. Right? But controllers, like for a single-player game like Mario, I don't want to use the Wiimote. I want to use the GameCube controller because it's going to do exactly what I want every time. For a single-player game, you just shouldn't be using the Wiimote.
Yeah. The whole gesture thing, really, the problem that I have with it is that it's very imprecise. So you can do certain types of movements, but and what I mean by imprecise is that the motions itself aren't imprecise, but the human's ability to do the same thing consistently with that type of interface is imprecise. It's very, very hard. It's like the analog buttons on the PS2 controller.
No, you're absolutely right about that. It's kind of like when I'm trying to draw circles on the DS for Elite Beat Agent, which I keep mentioning because I've been playing it like mad the last 2 days.
There you go. Now, we actually have a caller on the line who wants to talk with us about this very topic. Michael, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hey, Michael, how's it going?
Why does every caller start off with hello?
What would you like me to say?
What is it we're going to be talking about? This is Michael. Arat, do you know Michael? Is he a game developer as well?
Yes, Arat and I go way back.
There you go. Like, we go way back.
Okay.
Red Star way back. Actually, I was talking to Ara earlier today about like some Wii games that I bought. I bought Sonic and I bought SSX Blur. And this was unprovoked by his comments, but I was just kind of venting on how I was very dissatisfied with their control schemes and the way you interact with them in gameplay. And
now, what you were describing to me, Mike, was the most insanely convoluted thing I've ever heard before.
Yeah, SSX Blur's control scheme is like so incredibly demanding on the player that I don't even understand how somebody who's like, if they were a fresh-faced, you know, newbie to gaming, like that got introduced to gaming for the first time in a long time or first time ever with the Wii, that like why they would ever want to try to even grasp it. Basically, you have like three methods of almost controlling your snowboarder. You have the nunchuck, which you do basic steering with the analog stick, just left and right, right? That's easy to understand. And then you can also tilt the nunchuck to do sharper turns. So you do that in tandem with steering with the analog stick. And then...
Okay, that's two things just for steering so far. Okay, keep going.
Yes, and then, you know, the whole game's about, like, doing crazy stunts and tricks and building up your speed by successfully landing those tricks. So you nudge the nunchuck up to perform jumps. And in midair, you're supposed to do spins by flinging the Wii Remote, like, either side to side or up and down to complete somersault or sideways spin. And then you also can perform grabs holding the Z button, which is on the nunchuck. So your brain is, like, constantly fighting with itself. So it's basically, you know, patting your head and rubbing your stomach at the same time for this game. And then you have to worry about landing that trick by, you know, you have to prepare to land on the snow, you press A. And, like, more often than not, you're not ready to do that. So the final thing, the final terrible threshold of the control scheme is the Uber tricks, which I think on the Internet has been getting a lot of a bad rep because people are saying they're very difficult to do.
Surprise.
And they are. They're very difficult. You have to take the remote, press the A button, and carve out specific motions in the air. And if you're not situated in your front of your TV the right way, if you're not a perfect amount of distance from the sensor bar, and you don't press and release that A button at just the right time in the way you're carving the remote in the air, you don't successfully land that trick. And you're not going to.
Now,
even if you see you successfully perform it, you got to remember to hit A and straighten yourself out.
All right, this is pissing me off, because this kind of thing is exactly why I stopped playing a bunch of those iToy games, which seemed really, really cool until you realized that you started to put your hands in places and, you know, things weren't happening the way you expected them to, right?
Yeah.
You would miss, there was this one, it was kind of like a DDR style game with the iToy where you put your hands up in different locations and stuff. And it was really fun, other than the fact that the whole interface was just so inconsistent that half the time you'd miss when you think you wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And just feels like it ruins the whole thing.
This is really a case of them just trying to make absurd controls for the Wii, because people right now want to be doing weird stuff with their Wiimote rather than doing something that's actually intuitive.
Right.
And
go ahead.
Earlier before, I was saying how apparently EA is talking about how they're all about innovation, and I think this is them trying to be innovative and completely missing the mark.
Right. Well, it's, you know, innovation is good, but only so far. Because
what I had said to Ara before, like earlier today, was just that I think it's like it's respectable that they made an effort to successfully bring these kind of controls and this kind of game to the Wii interface, but it's like they tried too hard and they never took that step back and said, wow, like what we created was actually way more complex than just grasping a, you know, a control pad and having your way with some buttons and a stick.
Yeah, I don't know, Mike. I'm not one to congratulate failure.
Okay, maybe I was sounding a little like more pleased than I am, because I'm not really going to keep the game. So
yeah,
I'm on your side in essence.
The Wii games so far have really missed the mark, unfortunately. Like, I was all excited about it just because there could be cool things, and then I realized probably not. And of course, I'm still going to get it, and I'm still going to enjoy it to a certain extent.
It's funny you say that, because, Mike, weren't you just telling me today how pretty much only the Nintendo Wii titles, Nintendo-published titles, are really the good ones?
I think everybody realized that.
Go ahead, Alan, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I think that's pretty much, you know, everybody has that sentiment.
Yeah. Like, the only thing I've gotten satisfaction out of is probably Zelda Wii Sports, and even, I would say even Excite Truck, which, like, I've... find a lot more approachable than SSX Blur.
You would enjoy Trauma Center. That's the game that I enjoyed that wasn't made by Nintendo, and actually I had a lot of fun with.
That was a pretty decent game.
I've been told this also. I should probably look into getting that next.
It's also a fine example of making a game that used the Wii remote correctly. I mean, it's a weird game that has no basis in reality, but what you're doing with it, like when you're stitching up a patient, you're actually making a motion which is, you know, what you would expect. And when you're grabbing someone with tweezers, you're making a, what seems like a tweezer motion by pressing two buttons on the opposing sides of the controller. And it really works with the game, and that's why I like it so much.
So if anybody wants to call in and tell us what you think about the Wii, you can call us at 866-536-1100, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
And I'm Alon on the phone.
So, we were talking about the Wii, and I hear we have a caller on the hotline.
Yeah, we have a special caller, Ara.
Special caller.
And apparently it's a friend of Alon's.
Now why am I a little bit suspicious of this special caller?
No. Anytime Andrew comes on the horn and says we got a special caller, he's lying.
No, Lawrence called in, Alon's friend Lawrence. Now, I think he might have fallen asleep. He was on hold for so long, but can we bring him on?
All right, let's bring him on.
Yeah, here he is. Right. Lawrence, are you there?
That, I didn't realize that Lawrence was, sounded so much like a dog.
Lawrence of All Games Radio. I don't think that's really him, but what a good guy. Go to allgames.com to hear the All Games Radio show and our show, which airs on Wednesday, and I guess a couple other times during the week. On allgames.com stream.
A bear? Dogs, bears, you know.
Yeah.
They're all the
By
same.
The way, before we move on, of course, I'm going to mention uat.edu again, University of Advancing Technologies website.
You should go there.
Well.
Give them all your money.
I know I did. So.
You definitely gave them all your money.
I had a good time there. It was a good 2 years. Other people spend like 3.5 years there. But.
That's because they just love it so much.
I had a bunch of credits, so I didn't have to spend all my time there.
All right, so we still have Michael on the line with us, is that right?
I'm still here.
Okay, we still got Mike. So I just had a couple things I wanted to wrap up this topic with.
Okay.
You know, the one thing, there's really two main criticisms that I have of the Wii interface. The first one is that the gesture interface with the Wiimote is very, very slow. And If you don't know exactly what I'm talking about, what I mean by the gesture interface is that there's certain kind of actions you make with the Wiimote that we call gestures. And basically what those are is you make a certain kind of motion with your hand. Usually this is a more complex motion than, let's say, steering. It uses actually a different technology for steering. And then comes some kind of effect occurs, right? So in bowling, it uses the gestures. In golf, it uses the gestures. But the thing that I don't like about it is that it's a very, very slow type of interface because you have to complete the gesture and then you have to kind of wait for the results of it, right?
Yeah.
So it seems very, very limiting because if you abstract what you're really doing, I mean, you can just abstract that whole gesture, I mean, in most cases, into just a button press. And, you know, when somebody's playing a video game, if you can abstract something so efficiently into just a button press, well, then why don't you?
Yeah, well, that's one of the problems with it. Like, there's no reason to make you have to draw a star on the screen to do something except because they want you to be using the remote. And that's one of the things I liked about Trauma Center is that when I'm using it the good way, like tweezers or whatever, it's supposed to be that way. It really, that's what I'm trying to do in the game, and it makes sense. And when I'm stitching someone up, it makes sense. But when I have to draw the star on the screen, which is another part of that game, that's idiotic because then I should just be pressing a button.
And maybe a little satanic.
My biggest problem
with the games that I've had the most frustration with is just that I can't get a hold of the thresholds of, like, what the remote is doing. Like, with Excite Truck, you know, you really don't know the boundaries of the steering spectrum that the game has.
Right. Here's the other thing that gets me is that none of these games, especially the driving-type ones, have any kind of calibration or configuration or anything. Now, you could argue that for it to be a well-designed game, you shouldn't have to do that. And I'm not saying you should have to do it, but for people who are really into these types of games, it's very, very important to give the player a utility to tweak the mapping of the steering to something that they're comfortable with. Because if you just set it to one thing, and I think this is what is happening, invariably, the thing's going to be too sensitive for some people and not sensitive enough for other people.
Yeah, I actually wrote a blog post about that very point on ChatterboxGameShow.com a while ago, referring to golf, because when I was playing, or when I was thinking about golf before the Wii came out, I realized, all right, you know, I'm 150 pounds, I'm 6 feet tall, and I'm an adult, right? I can swing a golf club with a lot more strength than a six-year-old can. And I want to be able to swing my body realistically to hit that ball, you know, 240 yards or 200 yards or whatever. And I want the little kid to be able to do the same thing, but he has to really put some power in. So I would like to be able to calibrate it and say, all right, here's my maximum swing and here's my minimum swing. You can get an idea for what my putting is and what my wood hitting is, and actually make a game that's realistic based on my body type. I said, we have to be able to have personal calibration in these games.
Right.
And unfortunately, they don't do that
and
at
which,
all.
I don't understand why they don't, because, I mean, all kinds of games before we came out do it, so I don't know.
Well, but they were using buttons, right?
Well, no, even something like Gran Turismo with the steering wheel, you can configure the sensitivity of the steering wheel. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. In this case, I think what I want from the Wii is something that it can't do. I have a feeling it's a limitation of technology where they're simulating that they could do all these things, or that you have to swing the golf club, you know, like I do, when in reality you don't really have to do that.
Right. You can actually just jump up and down, which I do.
Yeah, or you can just sit, you know, sit on your couch and sort of rotate the controller,
right,
and it'll act as if you're playing golf. And so if it could actually know what's going on, if it had that absolute positioning that I had discussed, then that would make it a lot better. But that's going to take a lot more money and a lot more time to develop, I think.
I agree with Alon. I think they're just not going to do what a lot of people really want to be done with it. And also, like, I think what's going to happen for a while is they're going to treat this interface like developers treated the DS interface initially and start trying to cram in all these cool things just because they thought they could or they thought they should, like drawing the block, ice blocks away in Castlevania, or, like, every game has to have a microphone blowing thing, even if it makes zero sense. They think it's neat, and it was neat, like, when Field of Magic did it the first time, but now it's like, no, that's annoying as hell to be blowing into the microphone. Like, why do I want to lose my breath in Lunar Nights, like, when I'm just hacking flash?
Well, see, now you're talking about stuff. The Wii doesn't even have a microphone, man.
All right.
I know.
Well,
I was trying to make an analogous situation.
We've got about 2 minutes left, so I know, Alon, you've had something that you've been saving special for us.
Yeah, sounds like we have a lot less than 2 minutes.
Wow. Time flies. All right, you want to try it?
Yeah, well, I brought up Sony doing stupid things, and we can just add another one in before we go. Apparently, they're releasing the PlayStation 3 in Europe this month, and they're doing it. They're actually removing chips from the inside of the machine, so it can't do backwards compatibility stuff, PS2 and PS1, as well as the current model can.
How do you feel about this?
Well, they release it 5 months or 6 months late, they make it cost more money, and they take out functionality. I just think it's another one of the really bad moves that Sony's making, and I can't wait to hear Phil Harrison talk at GDC and how he's going to magically make me feel happy about the PlayStation 3 this week, because I can't imagine it, because all he's done is made me feel stupid for ever wanting one.
Well, there you have it, folks. Alon and his feelings on the PS3.
We'll be back next week with talk from content actually at the GDC. I'm excited for sessions. How about you?
Me too, man.
All right, we'll be back.
All right, good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.